So tell me about how you decided on the concept of legacy for this concert.
Every A Far Cry program is curated by usually one or sometimes a couple of the criers, the musicians of A Far Cry. And the way that process usually works is they go off into their thinking place. They come up with their artistic idea, and they bring to the entire group a completely fleshed out program that may include commissions, may include soloists, certainly the music. In this case, it was a slightly different genesis. I have actually been asking Pamela Frank if she would come and solo with us in A Far Cry for many years, practically since A Far Cry began. And when she finally said yes, this would have been about a year and a half ago at this point, the orchestra jumped at the opportunity for this collaboration. And then we kind of took it from there as far as what do we want this program to look like? What do we want it to feel like?
So then what happened next? Once you've decided on the concept, how do you go about deciding which pieces you're going to play?
Yeah, so this was really a collaborative process between the criers and Pam, our incredible violin soloist. Mm-hmm. So the first point that she made was that she would love to play with us, like with actually specifically some of her former students, of which I'm one. And so quickly resettled on the idea of something maybe by Vivaldi, something very energetic and celebratory that could be kind of a multi-instrument solo concerto. So that would be kind of a great way to bring generations together and just fun for everybody involved. So we had kind of the central violin feature element worked out. And then just about a year ago, my old teacher and Pam's old teacher, Shirley Givens, passed away. And we were commiserating about that. And Miss Givens was an incredible influence on really both of our lives and on lives of really thousands of musicians and of people just in her teaching. And she was also a writer and illustrator of method books for learning the violin. She's just so creative and so artistic. And we felt to honor her, it would be a really beautiful idea to dedicate the program to Miss Givens and to make sure that some of her very favorite music was on the program. It really kind of just deepened the process of talking about selections of repertoire, and the program got a little bit darker, but still extremely beautiful. And at its heart is communication and beauty and spreading joy.
Which pieces on the program were particular favorites of Miss Givens?
Well, Miss Givens' favorite composer was Mozart, by far. In fact, she once upon a time kicked someone out of her studio when they claimed they didn't like Mozart. She was serious about her Mozart. And so that actually led in a straight line to the Tchaikovsky that we opened the program with. Hmm. Tchaikovsky also idolized Mozart. And we found this beautiful string quartet movement that adapts perfectly for string orchestra that is very Mozartian in just its simplicity and its beauty and its cantabile, its singing quality. And then the Haydn symphony that closes off the concert, Haydn actually called it, unusually, he didn't name many of his symphonies, but this one he apparently did, the Trauer Symphony, which is the mourning, as in like M-O-U-R, mm-hmm. mourning symphony. But that, I don't know, it makes it sound a little too deep or too, I don't know, it's not at all a maudlin piece. It's not at all sentimental. It's full of energy, and it's from the middle period, the Sturm und Drang period, which is, you know, storm and stress. But there's just great energy and great life. And my particular favorite moment of the symphony is the third movement, which is the slow movement, which on first listen is not an incredibly remarkable movement. It's a lovely tune, and it has a very normal form, and the first violins carry the tune, and the rest of the orchestra accompanies, and it's all on its surface relatively straightforward. And then you learn a bit of historical info, which is Haydn requested this movement to be played at his own funeral, which is just wild when you think about it. It completely shifts the way you listen to this music, because clearly there's something else here. There's something very personal to Haydn. And also maybe a little bit of a wink. Like, I almost think of like a New Orleans-style funeral procession where it's more of a, like, let's reflect on the beauty and the joy of this life more than, like, let's all be sad together. So it felt like a really fitting piece for our purposes for this concert as well.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I didn't know that about the Haydn movement.
I don't know if you would guess it, but yeah, it's one of those rare, you know, it's easy to look too much into extra musical biographical info to inform the music making. But in this case, like, that really changes things, changes the way you hear it, changes the way you perform it, just knowing this little tidbit.
Absolutely. So during the concert, you spoke about Pamela Frank and Miss Givens as well. And I am interested in hearing what you think distinguishes Pam's playing and her performance, or the way that she was as your instructor and your mentor.
Yeah. Well, how do you sum up a person? And, you know, especially with someone like Pamela Frank, her violin playing is her personality, is like, it's just an extension, and she's just such an outgoing, full of joy, but also full of mischief. She's got a bit of an irreverent streak, and yeah, her violin playing and her teaching as well is just full of questioning assumptions. I remember, you know, you expect your music teacher to harass their students for not practicing enough. Like, you gotta practice more, put in more hours. There is one particular unforgettable week of my studies with Pam where we have a weekly studio class where all of the students of Pam would gather and have sort of a group lesson. Like, certain students would perform something they'd been working on and were close to ready, and collect feedback from the fellow students and then feedback from Pam. And one week she got up there and said, "You know what? I think you all are practicing too much." She said she detected wasted time in our practicing. And for the following week, she forbid all of us from practicing more than 1 hour a day. Now, if you're in conservatory and studying music to become your life, your life's work, 1 hour a day might just be your warm-ups. I mean, people were shocked and some people were upset. Like, I have to learn things. Like, I have concerts coming up. But she insisted. She's like, "Well, you're just going to have to practice smarter then. You're going to have to practice more efficiently, practice with your brain, not just with your fingers, repeating the same things over and over. No, figure out with your brain what's going on and how to make it better quickly." So it was just one of the most striking experiences of my whole musical training, was receiving that challenge and then hearing everybody 1 week later having improved so much. So this kind of sums up Pam, I think. It's like a key insight that takes you in a different direction that opens up a whole new world of possibilities.
What did you learn from that task?
Let's see. I mean, it was a while ago. Certainly just the exposure of how much wasted time there is when your typical student goes into the practice room and shuts the door, plops a scale book in front of themselves and then turns off the brain and goes through your exercise. You know, you go through your scales for the next 45 minutes, the next hour, the next hour and a half, you know? And there are scales in the Beethoven Violin Concerto too, which I believe is the piece I was working on at that time. Mm. So one of the things I decided is, like, you know what? I'm just going to start with the Beethoven Violin Concerto. I only have 1 hour that I'm allowed to practice. Exactly. And I can improve my technique and I can improve this piece at the same time. It's all about doubling up. Mm. It's all about letting your brain take on the heavy lifting in terms of learning how to play this awkward instrument, the violin.
Yeah. What was the moment that you decided you wanted Pamela Frank to be your teacher?
Well, at the Peabody Conservatory, I studied with Shirley Givens mm-hmm. for my first 3 years there. And as I mentioned at the concert, I then did one of the most dangerous things that a student can do, which is to switch studios. Pam, it was announced, was joining the faculty. It was announced this during my third year, so she would be joining the following year. And how did I know? I mean, I immediately knew. I mean, it was incredible. And you know, Shirley Givens taught me how to play the violin and gave me, you know, such a great artistic foundation and just sparked that interest in research and sparked that interest in learning and communicating. It really did feel like a next logical step that I should move on and study with Pam. So I approached Shirley very delicately, very carefully with this idea, and she was 100% on board. She said, yes, I think this makes a lot of sense for you. And I think she may have been slightly upset, but she taught Pam. She started Pam. Mm. She taught Pam as a beginner when Pam was 4 or 5 years old, up until her mid-late teens, up until she went to conservatory herself. So I think in that way, it was a pretty natural transition for everyone involved. And yeah, it worked out great. I ended up studying with Pam for 3 years, three more years at the Peabody Conservatory. And it's hard. You can't even describe like what your mentors mean to you.
Yeah.
That's what happened for me there.
Yeah. Sounds like you just clicked.
Absolutely.
Was this your first time performing with her?
Yes.
How'd that feel?
It's such a cliche, but it was a dream come true. I have dreamed and fantasized about having the opportunity to share the stage with Pam for so many years. And I've been watching her career. You know, she's had a series of physical challenges that has kept her from concertizing as much, certainly as she did, you know, in her 20s and early 30s. She was traveling the world constantly. She was performing with the Berlin Philharmonic 1 week and the New York Philharmonic the next week. Like, she was one of the very top soloists in the world until a series of injuries led her, fortunately for me, into a teaching path. But more and more, she's been tackling these physical challenges and getting back out on the stage in higher and higher profile ways. And so, you know, as I said earlier, us criers have been keeping one eye on Pam. And finally, we made that ask. And she said, yes, I'll come and play with you guys. And we couldn't have been happier with the way the week went. It was just such a joy to collaborate with her. It's a shame that your radio listeners won't be able to see, but Pam was just constantly turning around and playing directly with the horn players when they would share an entrance, or the oboes, or the double basses, and just the immediacy and the give and take, the chamber music ethos of the whole thing. It was everything I hoped for.
That's wonderful. So if we could think back a little further, I know I grew up playing the violin as well, and I remember very clearly the moment that I decided I wanted to play the violin. What was that moment for you?
When I decided to play the violin professionally?
At all?
Well, I can't tell you much about that decision because I was basically pre-sentient.
I see.
My parents tell me they found an advertisement, the classified ads of the local newspapers in Vermont for Suzuki violin instruction. And I was nearing my 4th birthday.
Oh.
And they asked me, you know, how would you like to learn how to play the violin? And they tell me, I said, yeah, I'd love to learn how to play the violin. But, you know, my very earliest memory that I can distinctly remember is of walking up the steps to this great big stone and brick building to my first violin lesson. And I remember that excitement and anticipation and approaching this big door and meeting this wonderful woman who would become my teacher for the next 10 years. So yeah, it's pretty much the truth that I can't remember life before violin.
And how about when you decided to play professionally?
That decision I came to a little bit later than some, but it was, yeah, it was my, I was halfway through my junior year of high school, and I think my violin teacher at the time, and my parents and myself, I think everybody was sort of assuming I would probably go into some kind of liberal arts track, that I would look for a college with a strong music program because I loved playing music. But when I, well, there are a couple factors, but the big one is probably going to summer music camp. There was a particular one called the Greenwood Chamber Music Camp, which is in Massachusetts, not far from Amherst, Mass. And that experience of playing chamber music with chamber music freaks, I realized that I was also one of those people who just had to play chamber music, which is to say, you know, small ensemble, like one on a part, intimate, you know, intense working together and then performing together. So from those experiences, I suddenly sprung it on my high school teacher. Hey, I think I might audition for some conservatories. And she flipped out because she was not preparing me for that kind of track. And she said, okay, well, if you're going to do that, like, we need to make some changes to your school schedule. In fact, like, I really kind of rearranged my life to allow for enough practice time that last year or so before those auditions came up. But yeah, that was I decided I better give it a shot now at the age of 17, 18. It's pretty difficult to come back to music in terms of performing, and not impossible, but difficult to take those years off. And I figured, you know, if the music thing doesn't work out, it's okay if you take a couple years off from liberal arts and go back. So it was kind of a logical decision. And in the end, you know, I was fortunate enough to be accepted to Shirley Given's studio at the Peabody Conservatory. And, I knew within the first month of being there that this is absolutely where I needed to be.
That's a good feeling.
Absolutely.
Do you remember anything particular about what it was that Miss Givens taught you while you were there?
My first lesson with Shirley Givens, this was, you know, one of my first days at the Peabody Conservatory as a freshman undergrad. I go up to her lovely studio with a big window kind of overlooking the central courtyard, and she was a rather kind of grandmotherly figure, just all smiles and welcoming me into the room. And she said, okay, well, you know, get out your violin. I'm going to look up my notes that I took during your audition. I said, oh, wow, she's organized. Uh-oh. And she ruffles through some papers and she starts reading her notes to me. And the first thing she read was, oh, good musicality. And she looks up at me and kind of gives me a nod and a smile. That's good. And the next thing she read was, adjust both hands. And she kind of looked up at me with a twinkle in her eyes and sort of rubbed her hands together. Like, all right, let's get to work. She had a knack for leading off with the good and then letting you know what could be improved. And that's something that I've tried to keep with me. I think that's a really, really effective way to go through life.
Yeah. Do you have students? Do you teach?
I do not have regular students. I like teaching, but I find it absolutely exhausting. It's almost as if you're on stage performing. I find that teaching, I have nothing but the highest respect for teachers, as people who can do this hours a day and days on end and weeks on end. Like, I suppose it's a muscle and you train it and you get better, but the amount of mental activity to stay two or three steps ahead of where your student is and figure out, you know, what you're going to tackle, what can improve, and to go back to one of Pam's great things, what is the most efficient way? What is the thing that I can say that's going to improve not just one little aspect of their playing, but like three aspects of their playing at once and not hurt that fourth aspect that we were previously working on? I know, it's an incredible art, and perhaps I'll do more of it someday, but yeah, at the moment, no.
So there were also some young performers that were playing with A Far Cry on Friday. How does A Far Cry organizationally get involved in mentorship programs like this?
Yeah, we were so fortunate to work with a number of incredible young musicians on this concert. And, you know, it was not an accident that this concert, entitled Legacy, dedicated to students and teachers, also featured many young students, some of whom were you know, being born about the time when Far Cry started. So that is a, you know, sobering realization. So there were three collaborations represented on this concert. Project STEP is a fabulous organization that exists to serve underrepresented communities in classical music. It's an intensive string training program, particularly for Black and Latino young musicians. And they're fostered, and Far Cry has a very close relationship with Project STEP. We send criers to coach them and to work one-on-one, provide mentorship with them. This is just an extremely, incredibly important mission. And yeah, we were fortunate to have a wonderful cellist, Matteo Vidali, join us for half that concert. And as well, we featured their honors string quartet before our concert.
That's right.
About half an hour before, they came on stage and did a beautiful performance of a Beethoven string quartet, a very difficult Beethoven string quartet. So that's Project STEP. Then we had a couple of different collaborations with New England Conservatory, one of which is we've been doing for many years, the Fellow Program, where we do auditions and interviews for current conservatory students to come and embed in a Far Cry for a semester. They really get the whole gamut because they work on administrative tasks with criers, with our staff. And, you know, that is tailored to their interests. If they're interested in community outreach activities, they'll work on something to do with that. If they're interested in marketing, they might contribute to our social media efforts, etc. And then they join us for a performance. And in this circumstance, we actually asked this wonderful violinist, Sofia Sokolai, to join us as a featured soloist alongside Omar, myself, and Pam on the Vivaldi Concerto for Four Violins, which I hope was a good experience for her.
Sounds like an incredible opportunity.
Yeah, I would have been grateful for that experience at that age. Finally, there's the New England Conservatory Preparatory School, which are high school-aged students, and we have an annual competition as well, and we take as many as we can because they're so wonderful, and these are musicians who are still being formed. They're in high school. They're working on some things, but they're just so impressive, and they're so responsible, and they're at rehearsal, and they're contributing to rehearsal, even. They're throwing their ideas into the mix. And it's just extremely humbling to see this really, truly next generation of professional string players to come onto the stage in a real concert with us. And, you know, we don't sacrifice one iota of quality having them on stage alongside, which is a testament to them.
Absolutely. All right. Is there anything else you'd like to add about this concert?
I guess I'd just like to say that the dedication of this program to Shirley Givens is a really sincere one, and that she really did make her life's work spreading joy to as many people as she could. And what I hope is that the word legacy, the title of this concert, just makes us all consider what our legacies are going to be in, what we can do personally to help to spread joy in this world.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kendall.